Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, it's Sunday. That means it's the main course. How's it going, Jack?
What? I'm here.
It's a real honor to have you back there. What happened?
I miss doing the Sunday shows. I mean, I'm doing the Monday through Friday now. Joe is here holding it down on Sundays, but I really miss these shows.
You went from the sexy studio in the heart of Roberta's to, you know, an office person editing alone in a room. Are you lonely over there?
Sometimes it's lonely, but I'm still here on Wednesdays, so.
You still get it. And you have a great Wednesday lineup. You were always like, I'm going to build Wednesday to be the best day. And I'm like, I'll believe it when I see it. And now, sure enough, you have a kick-ass roster. What's your schedule on Wednesdays?
In the Drink with Joe Campanelli, the wine program at 10 a.m., followed by Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis of the Beard Foundation at 11, Chef Story with Dorothy Kent Hamilton from the International Culinary Center at 12.
That's a PBS show, right? An ex-PBS show. And that's pretty big.
HRN show.
Yeah. So finally she's arrived.
Yeah. We've got Straight from the Source is our chocolate program at 3 o'clock, the Speakeasy at 4, and then our newest show, which is really good. It's called The Business of the Business, hosted by Phil Colicchio. It's Tom's cousin, who is a lawyer, and he's done a lot of work with restaurateurs opening restaurants and ventures, and it's all about the business of business.
That's going to cause a lot of tension between the Colicchio brothers, because now that he has a radio show here, he's obviously going to surpass his brother in fame and fortune.
Right.
And that's going to cause a lot of trouble, because Tom Colicchio was on top for a while in that relationship.
Saying, Tom's brother is... He goes, Tom's brother wakes up every day wondering why he's not the famous one.
I like it. He has a very strong connection to his brother, and they did him a surprise party for his birthday recently, and they seem to be a really tight-knit family group. So while I'm excited about today's show, we have Nicolette Maniscalchi, and she's in studio with us. Hello.
Hi.
We're also going to call, and maybe Jack, you want to get on the horn now to call Renato. We are going to talk about the Eat Real Festival, the largest food truck festival in the world. It was really interesting. Roberta's had a big event. They had a buyout, and it was the lady from Esprit, who I believe his name is Susie Buell. She's a big Democratic fundraiser, and they rented out all of Roberta's. I can't even imagine what that cost. And the big guests were Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. So that's kind of cool. And Bill apparently is just like magnetic, and he goes and he shakes all the pizza guys' hands and tells them a poignant story about pizza. I mean, there's not anyone who he meets who doesn't go away without being like, wow, that guy's intense. And he has such a facility to remember people's names and stories about those people. They say he's the best politician of all time. Anyway, I thought that was an achievement for Roberta's to have a president. And of course, Heritage Foods, my office is right around the corner, and we would hear like helicopters go over throughout the day. Marine One, Marine Two, you know, kind of making sure that everything was kosher here. Anyway, that was good. And Alice Waters, of course, was there because she's big friends with those groups of Northern California that support the political scene. What else? Jack, do we have Renato on?
Renato is on.
Hey, Renato, how are you?
Very good, John Patrick.
Ja, where are you right now in Jack London?
I am in the city where helicopters always fly, which is Oakland.
What is that?
Three, four police helicopters on top of us. So
is that drug enforcement?
Before, yeah. Especially in the Occupy moment, but there are always some helicopters flying.
Just like in your hometown of Bra, Italy, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Renato Sardo is a kind of, you know, one of the smartest, most intelligent people I know. He was the last boss I had was Renato. He was the head of the international offices at Slow Food. And that was back in the, you know, late 90s. And now he...
Yeah, in the days when Slow Food was cool.
Yeah, and the days when slow food was cool. It's funny how when we left, slow food plummeted, Renato. That when you, me, and Anya basically walked away, that ceased to be as cool. We were the pillars, exactly.
Yeah,
that's funny. But we were like, you know, when Paul O'Neill left the Yankees, they couldn't win another championship. So are you in Jack London Square at Eat Real, this big food festival?
Yeah, I'm in Jack London Square because the Eat Real festival is going to start anytime soon. It's the last day of the festival, which is now at the fourth year.
What is the Eat Real Festival? Tell our listeners.
The Eat Real Festival is kind of the mother of all the... It's a mix of a slow food event and a street food fair. So it's in the end, it's a great street food festival. And there are some educational stuff. So it's a big event. There are about 150,000 people who come down for the 3 days. It's It's great. I mean, it's fun. Everyone seems to have a great time, and it's made in and it's done in Auckland. So the vibe is really different from a food event that is made in San Francisco.
How is that?
I don't know. Maybe first of all, it's more diverse. You see, you know, people really from. Then it's I don't know. It's just less pretentious. Seems to be that's the impression you have. Sometimes when you do stuff in San Francisco, you have, like, you know, the official foodies of the community. Here, it's kind of more fun. And so then there is a lot of music, a lot of... then there is also, you know, a lot of education about butchering, about jamming. There are do your own stands. I mean, it's kind of a fun event.
Now, of course, you have a very close relationship to this Eat Real event because it's your wife, Anya Fernald, who basically organized it.
She's the one who started it, and I don't know now the title, but more or less she's still the director.
She's the founder. The
founder and... direct president, whatever.
She's the founder and still most powerful person of Eat Real.
Exactly.
It's very, very interesting.
She created it 4 years ago after doing Slow Food Nation in San Francisco in 08. So Eat Real was then done for the first time in Auckland in 09, and now we are at the fourth time.
Now, how is it different than Slow Food Nation and the Salone del Gusto? What is unique? Uh-oh. Hey, Renato.
Hi there, it's Anya.
Oh, Anya, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Wow, this show is kind of like holding a tiger by its tail. We're going all over the place. But it is a real honor to have the founder of the Eat Real Festival on. Give us a brief thing. Renato gave us a good definition, but from your words, what is Eat Real? What does it mean to you, and what does it mean to the city of Oakland?
At the festival, we try to create basically kind of a new city for a few days where there's all this incredible food that's available for under $5 that's really good for you and good for the planet. I mean, it's all made with good sustainable ingredients, hormone and antibiotic-free meats, local and organic where possible, and it's all super affordable. So families can come here with $20 and eat a really good, delicious, big, healthy lunch. And it's pretty cool because a lot of people who come to the festival are people who usually do eat it at McDonald's. So it's not like kind of a fancy foodie demographic. It's really people who are usually choosing fast food, and we're showing them a different way to eat.
How many vendors do you have, and how did you get them all?
I'm embarrassed because I'm not really on top of the details. I'm not really operationally involved anymore. We typically have between 80 and 100 vendors.
Okay.
And the way that it's structured, this is kind of one of the original breakthroughs for me in thinking about how to make festivals a little less sucky, was to make the vendor participation fee super cheap. So it's like $100 to participate in the festival. Mm-hmm. And some of our vendors do $25,000 in sales in the weekend. So
really?
They make a lot of money off of it. But, you know, a lot of food festivals charge like $3,000 or $4,000 to participate.
Right.
And so we made our entrance fee super cheap so that everybody wanted to participate, and we got to choose the best ones in terms of the flavors and also what they're willing to do in terms of ingredient sourcing. Mm-hmm. You know, we do kind of have more barrel because we were like, you have to charge under $5 and you have to use really good ingredients. ingredients, and not all of our vendors, they're not like the fancy chef trucks. They're usually, like, they have a lot of real taco trucks and stuff that are doing different things in terms of sourcing just for the festival.
Now, so, what is the significance of it all being trucks? I mean, why did you select that? Do you believe in that vehicle, no pun intended, for bringing and introducing sustainable products to maybe neighborhoods that don't have A16s or Roberta's?
Well, I felt like there was a way to do it and that was affordable, you know, so I felt like the idea that you just couldn't use good quality ingredients and affordable food was bullshit. So I felt like if we were to say, okay, so maybe you're not going to do a burger, but maybe you're going to do something with shanks, you know, mm-hmm. So if you actually help them, and so we actually work with them really hand in hand in the first couple of years. Now many of our vendors kind of know the drill, and a lot of them have actually switched some of their procurement and menus around the year. Like, they've changed because of the festival. But we actually, you know, work with them to figure out a way where they can still make enough money, but do it with a better quality ingredient. And so that usually meant, like, okay, well, can you use a different cut of meat?
Yeah.
Can you think about a smaller portion size, or can you put a bigger side on it of potatoes? You know, like, are there other things you can do to cut your ingredient costs on to keep your margin?
Very interesting. Now, what is the state of food trucks in California and in the rest of the United States?
So many people come to the festival. Yeah. Usually we get problems with AT&T
Oh, wow.
As well, so it may just be that issue, but it's kind of early, so I didn't think that was it.
Okay. Well, Anya, you are the king and queen of massive food events. I mean, I went to food event here in New York that was trumpeted as the best food event, and they've done all these inventions. It wasn't 10% of what Slow Food Nation was, and I haven't been lucky enough to go to the real festivals, but what I'm told, it's the same. So, I mean, it is amazing that you can pull 150,000 people into a single event space. I don't know how you organize it, and now you're not even involved in the operational details. You've delegated it. But
you know, we have a super decentralized structure. I mean, that's the key thing with events. Like, I now spend maybe 40 hours a year on eReal, mostly dealing with big sponsors, like with Whole Foods and Toyota and stuff. And, you know, that's a pleasure for me. There's the guys who make it all possible, so I focus my energy on working with them and making sure they get everything they can out of the festival. But we have so many people who have tons of ownership of it. You know, like, there's lots of volunteers that have been with us for 4 years running. Each section has people who are disempowered to make decisions and do it. So that's a cool thing, too, because it becomes a real reflection of the community. You know, and so I walk around and I'm surprised by, I really don't know what's going to happen until we get to the festival. And I'm like, this is so, you know, every year it grows and changes in different ways because of the people who basically own the different components of it and make it theirs.
No, absolutely, absolutely. But, I mean, there must be certain oversight for quality, right? Because, I mean, how do you assure quality in a decentralized structure?
Well, some of the key things, like which vendors get in, we do really manage that, and we have a real active role in selecting that. So, you know, we have general guidelines with people, and they work within them. And people are generally pretty respectful and, you know, want to work within the rules. You know, I've had some issues. We have basically no high fructose corn syrup, no trans fats, very little deep fried food, and very little, like, not too many cupcakes. I mean, that's a big issue for me just in general. I just don't like all these cupcakes everywhere that you see in street food.
Uh-huh.
And so we try to, you know, I just think, like, I want somebody to be able to walk around and whatever their kids want to eat, they're going to feel okay about it. You know, like, there is such a plethora of unhealthy choices that they have to be like, no, you can't have that, you can't have that. You know, trying to make it really easy because we have tons of families that participate as well in the festival. So we kind of think of that as a general guideline. We don't advertise that anywhere on our website. People will not find, you know, a Coke if they look for it in the festival. There's no soft drinks at all.
Wow.
But nobody has ever noticed that. You know, we have like 300 reviews on Yelp that are 5 stars, but nobody says, I really wanted a Coke and I couldn't find it.
Right.
So that was kind of, you know, just if you don't make a big deal about it, I think people don't even miss that stuff.
Yeah, no, you are absolutely right. Well, I mean, oh my God, well, we lost him. Now we'll take a break. We'll call him back at the end of the show. But, Jack, I'm going to go straight into Nicolette. Jack, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay. So, I'm sorry you've gone through all this. I've already, like, kind of introduced you. Nicolette Maniscalchi is the sous chef at A16, the legendary Italian restaurant in San Francisco. I don't know what neighborhood, but it's in San Francisco.
The Marina.
The Marina, yes, right by the water.
Yes.
It always takes a long time to get there.
Yeah, it's because we don't have any subway system because of all the earthquakes.
Oh, really? Is that why? Well, it's funny that you say that. I'm always surprised at how the greenest city of all is like most cars and kind of all that stuff, but the earthquakes are a big part of it. So how many covers do you do on a busy night?
On average, on a Friday and Saturday, we do around 300.
300.
Sometimes a little bit more. The most we've ever done, I think, is about 340.
340. Mm-hmm. And that's just for dinner?
Right.
And then are you open for lunch ever?
We're open for lunch on Wednesday, Thursdays, and Fridays.
And why is that? Just because those other days aren't that profitable?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of, it would get in the way of our production, a lot of it. But in general, the neighborhood, it's 3 miles from downtown, so we don't get a ton of foot traffic mm-hmm. for people going out to lunch. It just works better to be open mostly for dinner.
So now that's a big successful restaurant, and you were telling me earlier that the shifts are divided into two separate categories. So how does that work at A16?
Yeah, so you either have an opening shift or a closing shift, and so if I open, I get there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm responsible for producing the food for the entire day, basically for the restaurant.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
So, and then the other one is more butchering, and that's from noon to close.
Right.
And what time do you guys close?
Our last seating, depending on the day of the week, is either 10 or 11 o'clock. But usually it goes on later than that. And generally your shift is about 12 hours.
12 hours. So now, what is the routine for the 7 on? You know, a lot of our listeners are like, hey, I don't know if I want to be involved in restaurants. So when you get in at 7 o'clock, what happens?
It is a lot of work. So when I get there at 7, the person who closes, the chef that closes, writes a list for the next day. And so you're responsible for accomplishing every task on that list. So there's everything from making sauces to doing simple things like blanching vegetables or frying almonds, and then also pasta making, which does take a little bit more time.
So what do you have to start with? Like, what needs to get, you know, started in the pipeline first?
In general, everything is pretty fast to produce because we focus on using fresh ingredients and not altering them a lot. So the only thing that takes more time is probably the pasta sauce that we're the best known for is the ragu napoletana. And it's a very basic sauce. Basically, you just fry onions in olive oil, take out the onions, and then add in San Marzano tomatoes and pork trotters and prosciutto scraps.
Hmm.
That just sits on the stove all day for about 8 hours and just gets really thick and rich and delicious.
And what pasta do you put that over? Spaghetti?
That's a macinara pasta. It's one of our house-made pastas. It's a thick noodle that is common to the region of Irpinia.
Is it a thick, flat noodle?
It's not a thick, flat noodle. It's a little more rounded in shape.
Okay, interesting. So the sauces, they're starting, and then you make your own fresh pastas. How many of those?
Definitely one every day, sometimes up to three, depending on the pasta. The macinara pasta is a pretty fast pasta to make. It also has very few ingredients. In general, the pastas that are made in southern Italy just contain flour and water and salt, mm-hmm. really not much else.
So it's easy to screw it up because there's like very little
yeah,
margin
actually,
of error.
Yeah, actually, that one in particular... it can easily be way too wet, and then it creates almost like a lo mein noodle texture.
What happens in the cooking process for it to get too wet?
If you put too much water when you're making the dough, and then you are rolling out the pasta, it stretches out the noodles, and it just creates, instead of like a nice, fat, plump, thick noodle, you have just kind of like a stretched, you know, limp noodle, which is never a good thing.
That's not good. And then what's the other opposite end of the spectrum on that?
With pasta making, the opposite end would definitely be raviolis. Are super time consuming. And the recipe that we use is actually from a restaurant on the Amalfi Coast called Quattro Passi. And that one is a very rich dough, not a very traditional style, that has a lot of eggs and actually cheese in the dough as well.
Hmm.
And just making raviolis by yourself can probably take 3 or 4 hours. If you have help, it probably cuts it in half, but it's a very time-consuming process.
Have you ever heard of that Piedmontese tradition of pling? It's like an agnolotti, and chefs with big hands can't make it because it's so, you know, individual and very time consuming. And I think it requires 100 eggs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, slow food. There was this one lady that made like 1,000 of those a day, and she was like a town hero. So you do that, and then when does your shift end with the 7 a.m.?
With the 7 a.m., if depending on how fast I am and the amount of work to be done, I like to be done around 6 if possible. Usually that's pretty attainable. Some things that can throw you off, though, is once in a while we'll get a random whole lamb delivered out of schedule, and then that will cut into your day by a couple hours.
Because you have to butcher it right away?
Right, yeah. We would. I mean, anything we get in, we process it right away. We don't want to... First of all, we have no space for it. We have a very small walk-in refrigerator. And second of all, just to keep things, you know, fresh and moving along.
Hmm, interesting. So, and how many people work under you, or, you know, during that process?
Well, there's two other sous chefs that I work with. So we have three sous chefs, Chris, the head chef, and then probably about 9 line cooks as well.
Wow. And they're all there at 7?
No. So at 7, the days we have lunch, we have two cooks who work at lunch, and then the pastry chef will be there, and we have, I get one prep cook, so he'll cut everything for me, basically, which is very nice.
Nice. Pastry chefs, they're weird. They're like the drummers in the band or goalkeepers in soccer. You know, they're always off doing their own thing.
Yes.
So now, this is the more interesting and meaty schedule, it sounds like to me. It's the 12 p.m. to close, and that includes butchering.
Yes. So
that's an interesting task. I hear you're a very good butcher.
Well, I've learned everything from working there. I've worked there for 3 years now, so... when I started, I didn't know very much, but now I can break down a whole pig, so...
What's the hardest thing? Like, what requires the most arm strength or body
Definitely
strength?
The pig. It's very... It's a workout, just having to saw through all the limbs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I mean...
So what's that, the hams and the picnic from the...
Well, when we get the... We get two whole halves, and they have the feet on. For me, the most difficult thing is just sawing the feet off of... the legs, just because it is like a thick bone to saw through, and it takes a lot of arm strength, but I insist that the guys let me do it so I can show how strong I am.
Nice. And then you go kick their ass in the alleyway just to put a cherry on top of it. No, but so you butcher the animals. How long does it take to butcher a whole pig?
Well, we're pretty lucky right now. We have a lot of the cooks like to help out with the pig butchering, so usually it gets delivered around 11 o'clock, and our goal is to have it processed by 3 o'clock, which is when the line cook shift starts, because we have no prep space. So if we're still doing that, we're taking up their space, basically. So on a good day, it'll be done around 3, but there are definitely days where it takes longer than that.
And then you do whole cows too?
Lambs.
Whole lambs,
yeah, we get
whole
lambs
pigs.
And rabbits.
Well, by the way, you do buy heritage pigs, and yes. I can't tell you what an honor that is for us, because, you know, with Northern California is like the queen city for all these food traditions, and A16 is such an important restaurant, and you know that you guys, you know, find the quality in our pigs means a lot to us. So let's go to dinner service now. So first seating is at 5:30.
Yes. Yeah, and usually we're pretty full right away since we do have pizzas.
People eat early there. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, usually you get probably 3 turns in a night, but you do get a lot of families at first because we are, you know, family. We are a family restaurant, and so you get a lot of people getting pizzas quick at the beginning of the night.
Plus, people in Northern California, it's like late lunch. You know, I call it a late lunch. They call it like an early dinner. It's like 5 o'clock. I never know how they do that. But so what's the timing of it? Someone walks in, and how long before, you know, a waiter is supposed to come from the, how long before, you know, they get the order, before you make the appetizer, this and that?
Right. Well, I mean, it should be pretty fast, the whole process in general. All of our food is prepared very quickly. We have 900-degree wood-burning ovens that not only we could cook our pizzas in, but also all of our meats as well. So even our giant pork chops that we get from our pigs will cook in about 10 minutes, and they're like 2 inches.
800, 900 degrees?
Yes.
Wow.
Even by the end of the night, it'll be 1,000 degrees.
And so... do you make appetizers right away? I mean, the second you get that where you use a computer system, a little receipt comes in, and you're firing the appetizers. Right. I mean, how many people are back there?
So we have basically four cooks, and then sometimes we have an extra person to help out on busy nights, and then the chef who's in charge of everything. So there's one person who's making all the appetizers. And like I said, everything is a very fast pickup. So by the time he gets the ticket to the time it's in the window is probably less than 30 seconds. And then depending on their courses, you know, they might get pastas and pizzas after that or entrees. But we wait to fire things until the servers tell us to make them.
Oh, really? So the servers tell you. They're kind of like they basically are giving you lens into the pace of the table.
Right.
And what's the thing that takes the longest? I mean, are there certain things like certain orders where as you're making their appetizer, you're also starting on their main course?
No, we don't do anything ahead of time like that. Since we do have those really hot ovens, like I said, everything cooks very quickly. So there's no real need to pre-cook anything. So even like I said, the longest thing is a pork chop, and it only takes about 10 minutes, maybe 15. So it's really not a very long time.
Now, what if a great food reviewer or a great chef comes in and you know he's there and all they do is order pizza? Is that considered a little bit of an insult to the kitchen?
No, not at all. Pizza is why I worked there to begin with, and we're known for our pizza. To me, it's the best pizza I've ever had. The one thing, though, that actually can end up taking time is that we can only make four pizzas at a time in our oven. And so if you do have a lot of pizzas all ordered at one time, that will take sometimes, you know, 30 minutes or more.
Now, how long are they in there?
They're in there 90 seconds.
90 seconds. Wow, that's so little.
Yes.
Wow, very, very hot. And do you have a process when you pull them out? Do you lift it up into the smoke that hovers at the top of the oven?
That helps brown the crust more evenly.
Oh, really? So it kind of like subjects all parts of that pie to high heat. And what's the temperature? It's higher, hotter up there, right?
Probably. I mean, that's where you hold it into the smoke, basically, to get the color around the crust.
And what wood do you use for this oven?
We use almond wood.
Almond wood. And that gets delivered from, like, Mendocino County?
Right, yes.
It's like weed wood. That's why what makes it so delicious. Well, very, very interesting. And so now you've been there 3 years. And where, you know, are you going to open your own place one day? And what would it be?
Maybe one day. I really do have a great passion for Southern Italian cooking.
Are you Italian?
Yes, half Italian.
Okay. I was going to say... Maniscalchi doesn't seem so Italian, but
it's Sicilian.
Okay, very good. I was married to a Sicilian woman for 10 years, and I love going down to Syracuse and all that. Taormina. Where are you from in Sicily? Do you know?
I think from Palermo.
Oh, Palermo, nice. So you are Italian. One day you'd like to open your own place?
Yeah, I really like the cuisine of Southern Italy because it does focus more on just using fresh ingredients, not heavy use of butter, pretty much, you know, a lot of olive oil, and just letting the flavors of the food just naturally shine through, which is really great for being California as well.
Sicily is so interesting. It's positioned in such a crossroads of the world, like the Mediterranean Sea. So many cultures had gone through there and added either architecture, food traditions. My ex-father-in-law, they used to call him Il Cinese because he had, you know, Chinese-looking eyes, you know, and they always, you know, had cultures, blonde people with blue eyes, and, you know, Sicily was a real melting pot. So as a result, the cuisine is fascinating too. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
What is it? It's a16sf.com. If anyone's going to San Francisco and they want to eat, you know, like they would if they were in New York or whatever, a really honest Italian meal that, you know, respects simplicity, definitely go to A16. And we will be back after these messages.
Summer dress. Oh, kid, she doesn't need your help. She studied art.
You're listening to Boy Crazy by Cookies on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
It's all boys, men, they'll do anything. They sat her in the shade, threw her a parade, all lined up, marching back and forth all day. We'll be right back.
going, Joe? Your computer is so slow, I can't even use this thing.
Yeah, I should probably get a new one. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, totally, man. You should go to TechServe.
Okay, what's so good about TechServe?
Well, they've got this awesome new insider program that's free when you get a new Mac with AppleCare. So you should buy your computer there because you get 50% off data transfer, free loaner computers, front-of-the-line repair privileges, an annual Mac tune-up service, backup consultation and setup, seminars, and much more.
Okay, yeah, where's TechServe?
It's at 119 West 23rd Street in New York City. They're New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, and you should totally check out TechServe.com for more information.
All right, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
All right, we are back. Great, Jack. That was great acting.
Thank you. I thought Joe was a little better than me.
Well, we got there's a bunch of events we're going to announce. We have a goat tasting event on October 5th, and that same that's at the Heritage Meat Shop at the Essex Street Market, where we're going to have the slaughterhouse owners come and with the farmers and provide tasting of goat. And then that night is the second annual Astor Center goat demonstration and tasting, and that is with Chef Sam Richman of Gran Electrica. We also have a turkey tasting event September 28th at the Heritage Meat Shop, so check our website. And this Friday, most important of all, Mike Edison's fifth annual band book party.
Well, all right, thanks, Patrick.
The venue, 92nd Street Y.
That's the 92nd Street Y Tribeca, downtown.
Nice Jewish institution. The date, Friday, September 28th, 2012, 9:30 p.m.
That's right. It starts at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock doors, and we'll start soon after that. And I'm really excited. This is the fifth year we've been doing this, and I think it's going to be by far the best year of all.
It's an evening of literary hijinks, state-sponsored fear, vampires, music, sex, and smoking hot smarty pant thrills.
How can you go wrong? And now I have an S&M soccer mom.
Oh,
that's right. This is for the mommy porn battle royale, the mono a mono mommy porn battle royale. It's going to be Lady Chatterley's Lover versus 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh my god, I knew this thing would grow. This thing has exploded.
And you know, we've been doing this every year. It's
how does it play out? So someone shows up and they buy tickets for 10 bucks or 12
it's
bucks?
10 bucks, 10 bucks in advance. That's at the 92nd Street Y Tribeca. You can find it on their website, and of course on my website, Mike Edison. We've got a killer band, the Interstellar Rendezvous Band, which is my group, and with our special guest keyboardist Joe McGinty this year from the Losers Lounge, mm-hmm. plus Bob Burt, formerly of Sonic Youth, and the great drummer D Pop of the Bush Tetras and the Gun Club. I'll be hitting the theremin myself, and you know, it's a smart nightclub act that's sort of come into. It started out more as a literary event, and it's turned into this big splashy nightclub event that celebrates banned books. That means banned and censored books, books that have been, you know, banned by our government or censored across the years. Catch on the Rye, Huckleberry Finn, Tropic of Cancer, these would be your sort of typical things, but also teenage vampire books, because the Christian right tries to keep these things at a library. They're not too into warlocks. Harry Potter, always on the top of the list of books being challenged by family groups.
Interesting.
And you know who the real heroes are, Patrick? It's librarians. Sexy librarians, because they're the ones that keep these books on the shelf.
Their little and black glasses and shawls.
Any fantasy you like, any way you want to picture it is cool by me. But these are the people that, you know, really push back against, you know, prudes who don't want these books on the shelves.
Yeah, no, I mean, librarians are the great. Well, what was the great trial was the Scopes trial, right? What was that? What was the Inherit the Wind?
Well, you know, I mean, Darwin also was a banned book, The Origin of Species. Yeah. And there's still people who want to teach creationism. There are people who want to have that in the curriculum, that the Earth is only 6,000 years old. It's kind of whack, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that we go back to that. And that, although, you know, sometimes I just think it's one insane guy and that says that stupid thing, and then the news is like, we got one.
Well, there's a little bit of that, but, you know, just look at it. Half the country, more or less, is going to vote for Romney and as part of the Republican Party. And also, this week, we're also celebrating the release of my new book, I should mention.
I was just going to ask, Bye-Bye, Miss America, Bye. That looks really, really beautiful. I like it.
Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. It's a political satire and a sex farce. It gets pretty dirty pretty fast. But the premise is that this whole thing is absurd. And, you know, no matter what happens, no matter what happens, half the country is going to go left and the other half is going to go right, more or less, no matter what they say. And you look at the Republicans. I was talking to my mom the other day, is an educated Jewish woman, has no reason to vote Republican. I mean, if you really wanted to look at it objectively. But, you know, she's in the bag for Romney because she thinks Obama is a Marxist. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want to take it too far, but I'm pretty convinced she thinks he's a Muslim as well. And this is crazy because this is the information she's been fed, and half the country are in the tank like that. It's insane.
So what is this culture that you're involved in? I mean, the Bambook Party, I mean, this is a part porn, part, you know, wrestling, part, you know, performance art. What is this crowd? I mean, and has it always existed? Is it as strong as ever? Is it renewing itself?
Yeah, you know, I think it's
a subversive group.
It's a subversive literary.
Lenny Bruce kind of.
Absolutely, sort of this post-beatnik punk rock, smarty pants, literature, gonzo. And I'm a journalist.
Super smart.
I'm a journalist by trade. You know, I've written a few books. The last one was a history of men's magazines and about sex on the newsstand.
Yeah, and you were the editor-in-chief of a number of important magazines.
High Times and Screw Magazine, and I consider Bye Bye Miss American Pie really an extension of my work at Screw. It's just sort of like no holds barred satire on the whole situation.
So now who is reading that? I mean, has it changed? I mean, from Lenny Bruce's times to today, is it just the same steamroll of undercurrent of society?
You know, it's hard to tell. The world's changed so much, obviously, with internet culture and things moving so quickly and so much access to so much that you know, the attention span really has shrunk. And I should mention,
how do you focus the group? What are its moments? It's global or national?
Man, I wish I had my finger on that. I'll tell you what, though. Bye Bye Miss American Pie, which is available as an ebook for only $2.99, cheap, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and wherever ebooks are sold. And also as what you're holding in your hand, the limited edition print version. Which
will you sign this copy for me, even though you're not really giving it to me?
Absolutely. It's, you know, I went old school with the City Light style, you know, like Howl. It's hand-bound, as you can see, with a silkscreen cover, and I'll sign them and number them, and please visit me at my website, MikeEdison.com.
So how does one go about getting an ebook? They just do a search for Mike
Edison? Just go on the Amazon Kindle store. The easiest way, again, is to go to my website. You can click right through to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords, the iTunes bookstore. It's all there. And a really hot trailer, too. You can listen to me rant and rave.
And I'm going to be there this Friday. Absolutely. The 92Y Tribeca.
That's right.
Friday, September 28th. 8 p.m. Mike goes on at 9:30. $10 in advance, 12 at the door.
And do not miss the battle, the mommy porn battle royale. I've got a great S&M soccer mom to read
15
Shades of Gray. Well, it's a cross.
Soccer mom,
it's actually a cross dresser. So right. Better yet, I got my favorite transvestite to put on Reeboks and a dog collar.
Well, Mike, I think you are a great talent. You know, I'm honored to work with you here at HRN, and thanks for coming on and promoting your event. I hope it gets packed. It's 4-year tradition. Hopefully, it'll go on for another 40.
Well, thanks, Patrick. You know, I'm always happy to be here. I got my start right here on your show.
I think you started well before us.
And, of course, if anybody's listening, stick around. I'm going to be on the radio with my own show, the Mike and Judy Show, at 2 p.m. We're going to talk about banned books, Bye Bye Miss American Pie, and our special guest, Val Frankel, whose last ghostwritten effort, she just wrote Big Ange's book, you know, from Mob Wives.
Oh, my God.
This is her follow-up to the bestseller she wrote for Snooki. So we got a great show, 2 p.m. right here.
And then with Katie Kiefer's Straight No Chaser, and we have the Architecture Show. It's going to be a great week. And
the new morning after show.
Oh, yes. I was wondering. I was about to get annoyed and being like, what the hell happened to that? But the girls kept it going.
Kept it going.
That is awesome.
Jen Tully, the new hosts of the morning.
The Kiefers are taking over.
That's right.
All right.
Love those girls.
Great job today. Great job on the phones. And we will be here next week.
All right. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.